Welcome, everybody, to the February 7th meeting of the Senate Committee on Business, Transportation, and Economic Development. We have a very full agenda today with a couple of bills that have lots of amendments. What I'm going to try to do is we're going to move a couple of bills we heard previously to get them on their track in work session, and then I'm going to open the hearings. I think we'll start with 1543 because we have a lot of people from more than 100 miles away, and our courtesy is to try to get to those people first so you can get back on the road and get home. I will notice that I have the Senate President and a couple of other members who wish to come in and testify. When they show up, we'll pause and hear their testimony so we can get them back to work, which is important in this short session because we don't have much time to do a lot of anything. Alrighty, so let me start out with opening a work session on Senate Bill 1544.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 1544 move to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Dash one, dash twos, Mr. Chair.
We have to include
dash twos, Mr. Chair.
With the dash twos?
That's my understanding.
Dash twos, yeah.
With the dash twos.
Yeah. With
we
the
have to move the dash twos first.
Mr. Chairman, as we find out our
first.
Way this morning, let me pull back that movement of that bill to the floor, and I would move the dash two amendments to 1544.
Senator Atkins has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1544. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, the dash twos are adopted. Senator?
I move the bill as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 1544 as amended by the dash two amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion on the motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think the proponents of this bill made a very persuasive case. I see Senator Telfer in the back watching our deliberations. And I think it's everyone's intent, as it certainly is mine, to make sure that this land really does go into industrial use that will produce the jobs, and that this is, for those who are nervous about a carve-out, I think the fact that this is going into industrial use and it will be producing jobs is something that allays some of those concerns. It's a unique piece of property. But I think our legislative intent would not be fulfilled if, for some reason, this was diverted to some other use. I just wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you, Senator. You're right on track. We had lots of discussions, and this is a unique effort, I think, by the citizens of Redmond through their elected and appointed officials, as well as some of those well-known groups, Thousand Friends and Land Watch Central Oregon, as well as the Department of Land Use and Conservation Development, I always get that, it's too long of a name, and ODOT, among others, to work this out. And the commitment is that it will be focused on industrial. And we're talking about jobs, that's what we've been talking about since we started last January, and hopefully this is another step in a small manner to get us there. So further discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none. Senate Bill 1544 is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation by unanimous agreement. We'll close on 1544. Carrier, I will carry the bill. Well, actually, Senator Telfer and I will co-carry the bill. All right, so let's roll the dice. Is the Senate President in room? We'll see him.
Do we need an amendment on 1546?
Yeah, let's do 1546.
We don't have fiscal yet.
No.
Well, let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1543. And Patrick, would you like to tell us about all of the amendments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1543 is the bill that we introduced as a committee bill during session. It has two parts in the original bill, one part dealing with a transportation planning rule, the second part dealing with reallocation of funds in the Jobs and Transportation Act, House Bill 2001-2009. We have five amendments for you today, Mr. Chair. The dash one amendment would delete the section one of the measure, which is the transportation planning rule portion. The dash two amendment changes the date required in the annual report on the JTA portion from March 1st to November 1st, as we discussed in our January meeting. The dash four amendment prohibits maritime pilot licensees or trainees from having financial interest or deriving income from any tugboat or operation on the Columbia River barge, pilotage ground, Columbia River, the Willamette River, Coos Bay, or Yakina Bay. That's the dash fours. The dash fives delete section one of the measure, which is the TPR portion, and also change the required report in section two from March to November, but it also contains provisions directing the commission to reallocate unspent balances from certain projects to certain other projects, and I can let Senator Starr speak to that, or somebody else perhaps, to go into more detail. And the dash sixes modifies the fee for an abstract of driving record under ORS 802-220 from a reasonable fee established by the department to a fee of $2, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we're going to bounce around a little bit on this to try and get the people who have come a distance. And I have committed to Kim Duncan, who's the board member, I think chair of the Board of Maritime Pilots, that I would let her speak so she can get back to, she has another engagement. So Kim, if you want to come forward first.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Are you ready? Okay. My name is Kim Duncan, and I've been on the Board of Maritime Pilots for about 5 years now, and I've been the chair of the board for the last three. I'm here today to discuss an amendment that you're going to be talking about today that would prohibit maritime pilots from having an interest or deriving income from any tugboat operation on Oregon pilotage grounds. This amendment has the potential to impact pilotage costs in Oregon and operations as well, and because of that, the Board of Maritime Pilots would more than likely get involved at some time. I have a recommendation for you, but I think it would help to give some context about our work so that you can understand why I'm making it. Some of you on this committee know a little bit about this board, but I expect others of you don't. And I will be quick to give you some background about what we do and how we do it. Of historical interest about this board is the fact that it's probably the oldest board in the state, and its formation precedes statehood. Pilots, well, many of us first learned about pilots when we read Mark Twain, but here's what they do in Oregon. They board ships, either at sea or at port, and they bring them into Oregon ports, or they board them at the port and take them back out to sea. Pilots are required by state law to be on ships that come into Coos Bay, Aquinnah Bay, over the Columbia River Bar, and up the Columbia River as far as Portland. Well, why do we require this? Well, pilots are highly trained mariners. They can direct ships of all shapes and sizes, and quite frankly, it's very impressive. And they have detailed knowledge of their waterways. And that assures that ships move safely in and out of harbors. And the consequences of not attending to this safety can be quite severe. Oil spills, dock damage, bridge damage. You read about this. It happens elsewhere. We've had a great safety record on our pilotage grounds for a number of years. But consequences are real. Our board is not unique. Every maritime state has something like it. Who serves on the board? Well, in Oregon, it's a big board. We've got 9 members. 3 represent the pilot community. 3 represent the industry and ports of the state. And then there are 3 lucky public members who are asked to serve, and I'm one of those. We have a lot to learn because it's a complicated industry, and we work pretty hard at it. The job that we do is regulatory. And like the PUC, this board is one of the few rate-setting boards in our state. We establish rates for pilot service based on ship size and tonnage. Those rates then translate into tariffs that the ships pay as they come into our ports or leave them. The board also sets licensing requirements. That means we set the standards that pilots need to meet to work and their continued professional development and other related items. So, setting rates. And this is where this amendment may have an impact. It's a complex and frequently passionately debated process. The board, when it looks at setting rates, one of the factors it looks at is the cost of moving a pilot from land to sea and to board a ship and then to come back down and go back to port. It usually requires cost to create this transportation. It's done exclusively by tugboat in Coos Bay and Yaquina Bays and by boat and helicopter up on the Columbia River. Now, as I read the draft amendment that you're looking at, draft amendment number 4, I believe, it has the potential to immediately affect transportation costs, particularly for pilots in Coos Bay, and consequently could affect the rates. It also could or may affect the operations on the Columbia River. Now note I've said may and potential, and that's because our board hasn't evaluated the issues or its consequences, intended or unintended. And that's because we just learned about this amendment on Sunday. In addition, in the time I've been on the board, 5 years, this issue hasn't been raised to the board. And our administrator let me know, she's been there 20 years, that it hasn't been raised in her time working for the board. But we do have several ways in which these kinds of issues can come to us. One is through a complaint process, and we'll even take anonymous complaints, or through our rate proceedings. We've had 3 rate-making cases since 2009, so there's been an opportunity for our stakeholders to come forward and engage in that process as well. And we didn't hear about this problem. So I come to you today saying there could be issues that affect rates for pilotage, and it may, and there may be some unintended consequences for operations on our pilot grounds. And I would appreciate the opportunity to have the board, that is the Board of Maritime Pilots, address these concerns through our existing administrative processes. And then should a legislative solution be appropriate, or even if there is a difference of opinion about that, the board could make an informed recommendation based on evidence to the legislature. I recognize that in a session that is only supposed to go until the end of this month, that kind of recommendation won't mesh with your schedule. But it would allow a vetting of the concerns and an opportunity to explore solutions and consequences in a very deliberate and structured manner, and we could possibly deal with this at the next session. Anyway, I hope you will consider this alternative as you listen to the proponents and the presumably opponents to what the content of this measure is. There may be a process way to effectively vet this issue.
Ms. Duncan, I'm not going to use the right nomenclature, but my understanding is that the concern that's been raised is not so much about the pilotage or moving the pilots either way, either to sea or back to sea, but it's more about the rates for the tugs, or I'll use that term, that's probably the wrong one too, but the boats that assist in docking the ships. Is that rate set by the commission as well?
Transportation costs are considered and become part of what's paid when you pay a pilot fee. So yes, that's where I'm saying that there could be an issue with regard to what the transportation costs could be.
But is it a regulated rate?
Yes. It's added to the pilotage fee, and that is an expense to the pilot. So we have to work it at fees that compensate the pilots and that cover expenses.
That wasn't my understanding. Senator Edwards?
Yeah, so follow up on that. You said and cover expenses, whatever expenses they turn in, is the rate to go from the port out to the ship and back, is that
rate?
Right. It's always the same?
And then when we look at that, we look at all the cost attendant to that, and transportation is part of those costs.
But not a set allowance.
It depends. Up on the Columbia River, we do have a fee for our helicopter service that's attached.
Senator Atkinson?
I have three quick questions. One is procedural. Were your comments checked by the governor and the governor's staff as you're speaking on behalf of the...
No, and I'm not speaking for my board because we haven't had a chance to meet. I'm just since this time.
Okay, because the governor's name's on the letterhead, and I've been very concerned about the governor's agencies getting in front of the governor on policy.
Well, I'm not discussing the policy. I'm talking about the process here, and we've had 48 hours or less to deal with this, and I thought it would be helpful to the committee who's facing a fairly difficult issue to understand that there are some alternatives, and that was the intent of my testimony.
The second question, is it very possible that prices could go down?
You know, I can't comment on that because I simply don't understand the implications, and that's my concern. We simply haven't vetted this. Sure, it's possible prices could go up, down, or sideways.
Well, my experience with monopolies is that when monopolies no longer exist, prices go down.
You know, I simply can't comment on that.
More? Thank you very much.
We'll thank you go. For your time and attention.
All right. Mr. Hageldorn and John Knutson? Sure. Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John DiLorenzo. I'm a partner at the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine. I'm here today in support of the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 1543 on behalf of my client, Knutson Towboat Company. First, a word about nomenclature in response to a question that was raised just moments ago. This amendment talks about the relationship between bar pilots who engage in pilotage and ship assist companies who are the towboat companies that once the ship is into port help maneuver the ship so that it can gain access to the dock. It is my understanding that although pilotage charges are regulated, ship assist charges are not. They exist in a marketplace generally throughout the nation. For over 30 years, my law firm has represented Knutson Towboat Company. The company has operated for almost 100 years, providing ship assist services at Oregon ports. To the best of our knowledge, the ports of Coos Bay and Newport are the only ports in the country in which a state-licensed bar pilot can also own a ship assist towboat. The circumstances you are about to hear have been percolating over the years, but have recently reached a critical mass. The rates, the combination of rates, pilotage plus ship assist, now charged by the only available bar pilot who happens to own a towboat assist service, which he recommends to ship owners, is making the Port of Coos Bay uncompetitive as a shipping destination. This functional monopoly has now reached a boiling point. My client, John Knutson, is the president of Knutson Towboat Company, and I would like to take a moment to now defer to him to explain why this amendment is necessary and is in the public interest.
Chairman Byer, members of the committee, for the record, I'm John Knutson, owner of Knutson Towboat Company, president of the company. And we as a company provide certain marine services in Coos Bay as well as Aberdeen, Washington and Eureka, California. Some of those services include ship assist activity, which in the past we have been involved with in Coos Bay, but not in the last 20 years. Approximately 20 years ago, it became too onerous to continue to fight the virtual monopoly that the pilots in Coos Bay have on ship assist activity. As has been previously alluded to, the pilot is a state-licensed individual who is required to be aboard all foreign flagship vessels that ply within our ports here in Oregon. You can only become a Coos Bay pilot if you're chosen by the Coos Bay pilot to go into training. It's a very closed shop, and due to that, there are no opportunities for other companies in the ship assist business to develop their own pilot to have a similar situation as the Coos Bay pilots have with their company, Coos Bay Towboat Company. It virtually is a locked shop. We gave up on Coos Bay. We moved into these other ports, as I previously mentioned. However, last May, I was asked by a steamship company to quote on assist rates in Coos Bay because of the high rate they had been paying for those services. We emailed back and forth for a couple of weeks, and they accepted my proposal, gave me an assist. The Coos Bay pilots were informed, and within less than 24 hours, the terminal where the ship was going to berth made an unprecedented announcement that they were going to include ship assist as part of their tariff and their rate structure for their dockage, and they were going to nominate the company that could do the work at their facility, and that company turned out to be Coos Bay Towboat Company. I then received a letter from the steamship company, which is Pacific Basin Steamship out of Vancouver, BC, a Captain Chin. Captain Chin was a person that I had been corresponding with and who had given me the verbal agreement to do his work from that point forth. And he acknowledged the fact that we had given him a good quote, but unfortunately because of the monopoly situation, he was no longer going to be able to stand by that agreement. Since May of 2011, there's been approximately 24 to 25 ships for this particular steamship company that have come to Coos Bay, and they have paid roughly over $300,000 more than the rate that we had quoted to do that same work. And our rate is a market rate for up and down the coast. The customer whose logs were on Pacific Basin's vessels had sent an email to the terminal operator prior to our being chosen to be the ship assist company with a comparison of rates up and down the coast from ports from Longview to Everett, Washington, and others. And Coos Bay was virtually 100% higher than the other firms or the other ports. This only can exist in a closed shop in a monopoly. Other ports where we do ship assist, we work with marine pilots, we work with the same dangers that people speak of today. We're not talking about providing pilot boat service in Coos Bay. However, we do that in Eureka and Aberdeen. We are the pilot boat. And we've done both places for a combination of over 20 years. So it's not because of lack of experience, quality of equipment, or rate. It's because this is a closed shop and it's unique to our country. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Beyer. Committee members, Drew Hagedorn appearing today on behalf of the Greenbrier Companies. For those of you that don't know, Greenbrier is a publicly traded Oregon-based corporation with manufacturing facilities in Portland. Greenbrier builds rail cars and, for purposes of this bill, marine barges. I think Mr. DiLorenzo and Mr. Knutson did an excellent job of framing the competitive issue in this case, and it's our general notion that a more competitive port system encourages commerce and more economic opportunity, therefore, not only along the coast, but at our manufacturing facilities in Portland. So it's for that reason that we look favorably on this. We see an opportunity here for Greenbrier and for our employees, and we encourage this committee to look favorably upon the Dash 4 amendments. Thank you.
Questions of these folks?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Jim Geisinger? Let's see, Jim. Nope, there you are. Gosh,
Chair Byer, thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of the Dash 4 Amendment. For the record, my name is Jim Geisinger. I represent Associated Oregon Loggers, trade group here in Salem, representing about 1,000 independent contract logging families and businesses associated with the logging industry. We favor this amendment for a very simple reason, and that is to give a shot in the arm to the Port of Coos Bay and the companies that rely on it for free trade. Our members associate themselves with a lot of wood products trade out of the port, including logs, lumber, and chips. This is an issue, as I understand it, that's been festering down there for many, many decades, and this amendment is intended to do one thing and one thing only, and that's to level the playing field for the market, for pilots, and for ship assist companies. We support this amendment because we think that it would give a boost in the arm to an area that has been economically depressed for quite some time, and certainly assist our industry in taking advantage of developing markets for finished products, logs, and for chips. We wish to express our support in the strongest terms possible and hope that you seriously consider adopting the Dash 4 Amendment. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Jim. Questions?
Just one real quick.
Senator Starr?
Thank you for your testimony. Are you aware, is there a potential for a significant forest products company that wants to potentially locate operations in the Coos Bay port area that is looking at this as a detriment as it relates to their overall cost?
Chair Byer, Senator Starr, I'm only aware of the talk on the street, and that what I hear is that there is one or two companies that are potentially interested in locating export facilities in the area, and I think one of the hurdles, frankly, that is causing them to pause about making that investment is this very issue we're talking about this afternoon.
Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. Again, talk on the street, but that would equate to more jobs and more economic activity within the port, which quite frankly probably could use it.
Chair Byer, Senator Starr, that, and even more importantly, would require more loggers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
More importantly.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay, Dave Fiskum, Captain Steve Woods, Captain Charles Yates, and Marvin Calder. I don't We may have to grab another chair. I don't know whether we can get another chair.
I'll do that, man.
Okay.
Let him come up.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, Dave Fiskum here representing the Coos Bay and Yaquina Bay Pilot Association and Coos Bay Towboat Company. We're here to oppose the amendment, the Dash 4 amendments, which have come to you fairly quickly, as well as to us. With me to my right is Captain Steve Woods, a member of another of my clients, the Columbia River Pilots, and Steve also has credentials, licenses to take ships over the Coos Bay and Yaquina Bay bars. He's also a current member of the State Board of Maritime Pilots. To his right is Captain Charles Yates, a longtime Coos Bay and Yaquina Bay bar pilot, a lifelong resident of Coos Bay. He's worked on towboats since 1969, then became a Coos Bay and Yaquina Bay pilot in 1984. Over the years, as shipping declined in Coos Bay, Captain Yates acquired the departing pilot's interest in the pilot boat and is now the sole owner of Coos Bay Towboat Company. Should add that behind us is Marvin Caldera, the president of the ILWU local in Coos Bay, not my client, but he has met with me today. He has traveled up here from Coos Bay to raise questions about this amendment as well. So I'll be giving my chair to Mr. Caldera with your permission, Mr. Chair, in a few moments. Just a couple comments before I turn to my colleagues, Captain Woods and Captain Yates. My first point to you is that I would urge you not to consider such a far-reaching amendment as has been proposed, proposed to be added to a bill, Senate Bill 1543, which does not deal with pilotage issues. The relating clause, obviously, relating to transportation, would allow this amendment, and we have no quarrel with that procedural point, but it's clear the underlying bill deals with issues not related to maritime pilotage. And I would submit to you that there is not enough time for you or for me or anybody else, for my clients, given the compression of this February session, to do justice to the issues raised by the amendment, which go far beyond the Senate bill before you. Could jeopardize that bill, theoretically, though I don't know that to be the case. I would add to you as a friendly comment that one of your colleagues this morning, not on this committee, said to me that this was one of the best committees in the legislature, so my comments about there being no time is no reflection on you or me or anybody else. It is simply the fact that this is a very difficult short session to make decisions on this far-reaching issue. My second point for you is that at the moment, my understanding from my clients and my involvement in this issue over the last 48 hours is that anyone who is willing to invest in capable equipment and crews is free to compete in the tow boat business in Coos Bay in Yaquina Bay. No company is prevented, either under state or federal law, from offering its services in these bars and harbors. Let me turn, Mr. Chair, with your permission, to the colleagues to my right who have, in fact, traveled beyond 100 miles to get here. At least Mr. Captain Yates has, and we'll be happy at the end of our comments and to answer any questions you may have. So, with your permission, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, my name is Steve Woods. I'm a Columbia River, Willamette River, Coos Bay, and Yaquina Bay state licensed pilot. I was full-time employed at Coos Bay for 11 years. When the shipping decreased considerably, I was allowed to transfer up to the Columbia River and train. I'm fully unlimited there now, and I remain as a backup for Captain Yates when needed. One of the things that I comment that I have that is not quite right is that the Oregon Board, I'm also on the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots. I was on there 8 years between 1996 and 2003. And I just was reappointed 6 months ago or thereabouts. The Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots chooses the pilots. A pilot makes an application to the state. He shows his credentials, a federal license, his pilotage, his experience over the years. And the Board of Maritime Pilots has a committee of the chair, the steamship community, and also the pilot for the grounds, and they interview the candidates, and they assign points based on the interview as well. After that, they total up the points. The guy with the highest amount of points is number one, and number two and three, respectively. When a pilot is needed at Coos Bay, well, then the pilot group goes to the state board and requests a pilot, and the state board looks at their list, and they take whoever's number one. It's not a deal where Coos Bay pilots present their candidate. At one time in the state of Oregon, that's the way all pilot groups did things. That's been changed for many years. The other comment that was made is that the fact that a dock made an agreement with a towboat company to provide service. That also happens all the time on the Columbia River. That Shaver will have an exclusive contract on a dock, or Foss will have an exclusive contract on the dock. So wanted to get that clarified. As far as the pilot vessel hire and the pilots for their transportation, it's incorporated in the rate for a certain amount in the overall calculations when they put things together to fund the pilot transportation so the pilots can supply their boats or hire their boats, if however they choose to do it. That's completely separate. We're entitled by the state to supply ourselves with our own transportation or have the overall say who we're going to get on board with. It's our life. If up in Grace Harbor, they've dumped pilots in the water twice in the last 3 years. I'm not sure which company was providing that service, but it was a fact. 5 years ago, we lost six pilots in the United States
due to pilot transportation accidents for whatever reason. So it is a very big consideration for us. The,
could you tell the Senator that I need to finish?
As far as the ship assist rates go, when they calculated the rates for the pilot vessel hire at Coos Bay, it was done with the idea that this is how much they can do it for, and part of the reason they could do it, and it was determined it was half the cost of what it would cost as a standalone business. And the other reason, and the reason that was half the cost, was because it also derived income from ship assist. And it was found by the state board, by the hearings officers, and numerous rate-making cases that that was allowable, and it was a good deal. There's been other times where, through other litigation that's gone through, that if there's a problem with any idea of non-competitiveness at Coos Bay, the individual that was involved in that litigation would go to Judge Hogan and with his concerns, and it would be mitigated or arbitrated. That has never been done. So this has been out of the blue. But I guess my objection to it, I'm no longer a stakeholder in Coos Bay Towboat. I am strictly a Columbia River pilot, but I will be using those boats as pilot boats if they're allowed. The way that statute reads, it reads towboat, tugboat, that's all. It doesn't say ship assist vessel, it says tugboat. Well, and this also affects every other pilot in the state of Oregon. There's 60 pilots in the state of Oregon. This bill basically is a put Charlie Yates out of business bill. And because it's only him that's going to be affected, except for if I want to buy a 300-foot log towboat or something just to move somebody's boathouse around on the Willamette River, I can't do that because it's a tugboat. And our pilot vessels, our pilot boats, there are Coos Bay towboat pilot boats, are tugboats. So there's, I agree with the Chairman Duncan, or Chair Duncan from the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots, this is a very complex issue. It's been visited many times before, but it directly affects the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots and our statute that we operate under, and it needs to be vetted much more thoroughly than have this stuff presented 48 hours ahead of time and then make a decision that just changes state law or statute. So I guess that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Captain, if I could, who decides which ship assist operator will be used once the pilot brings the boat in?
That would be the customers, and that could be either the ship agency that's handling the vessel, or if they're a steamship company, the people they're working for directs them to utilize that company, then they utilize that company. And in the past, there was a market share of 10% to 15%, and that's the way we operated. And some of the shipping companies would go 50-50. One time they would use Knutson Towboat, the next time they would use us. Some of the vessels, he had all of it. But we have, you know, Coos Bay Towboat and has been operating for over 80 years as a state, or since 1931, and that's a long time to develop relationships with long-term customers. And regardless of how cheap a person can go with his equipment, sometimes long-term relationships with your customers lend a little bit more weight. Mm-hmm. And that's,
is the pilot obligated to use whatever ship assist the customer, the ship, or whoever
the ship assist vendor? Yes. The equipment depends on the type of vessel you're working with, the size of the vessel, what you're going to be required in actual tons of force to counteract the force of the ship that it's going to develop through winds or current or whatever. On the Columbia River, when I get notified by our dispatch, who's notified by the shipping company when they order up a pilot, we're told who's going to be the tugboat vendor. And so when I get the call, my 2 hours notice, they say, okay, here's your job. It's a 900-foot ship out of the container terminal. We want you to have, or your tugboats are Shaver. Well, I can call up Shaver and say, what do you got for boats? And they'll say, well, we're going to send you the Columbia and the Jim Moore or whatever. And I could say, well, that's not going to be enough. I want two tractors on that ship. Well, I said, well, we only got one tractor available. Well, then go to the other company and hire it.
and I want two tractors. If you can't provide two with your own stuff, you need to do this. So it's always a consideration of what we need as equipment for the job. The vendor, we don't care. And Coos Bay, that was the way it was also. It just, there was, Coos Bay Towboat did have a larger market share, but it had more to do with long-term relationships. But if I know when I was there full-time and I was using those boats, if I was told it was Knutson, I used Knutson, I treated their boats with respect, I treated their crews with respect, and I used them. So, and that's, they're still capable of that now. There is no monopoly at Coos Bay. And the, so there's no monopoly, and the, as again, the way the just the wording itself is sort of thrown together as far as just where it just says towboat. I take issue with that. I should be able on my time off buy a towboat of whatever size to do what I want to do. If maybe not ship assist, but if I want to utilize it in other respects, I think that needs to be considered. So I would suggest that it's not heard here in this venue, because all these issues need to be vetted properly. They need to be vetted with actual proof, not just allegations and the unsubstantiated statements. I mean, my statements are substantiated, but I fully I fully support being able to have an avenue that we can do that, because in the past we've been able to present our case and do fine with it. There is no monopoly. So thank you.
The state has chosen in the past, for whatever reason, to put a regulator, in effect, the Board of Maritime Pilots, to, I assume, regulate the safety of the movement in and out of the, across the bars and in the ports. Is this an issue that should be referred to them for a recommendation?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I kind of interrupted. Captain Yates?
Thank you, Senator Chair. I'm Captain Yates, Coos Bay and Yaquina Bay Bar Pilot. Like Steve, Captain Woods said, this is very short notice, and this is such a complex issue here that is trying to go forth in front of all of you. What Mr. Knutson kind of was recommending, that we recommend our tugs for ship assist, and that's not correct. In the past, I have recommended Sauce Brothers or Knutson for some other job that's come up that I've gotten calls for. We have used them in the past. We do not have a monopoly. And like Captain Wood says, that the rate for the pilot boat hire is kind of offset with the ship assist a little bit, because that's a savings for the Port of Coos Bay and for Yaquina Bay. That was allowed back in the 80s. That hasn't been raised since then. We have the boats on a 24-hour anytime you call situation, and plus the crews, trained crews that go with this. We've had some calls in the past of a disabled fishing vessel, small ship actually, drawn 30 feet of water. I got the call. We had ship work, and I said I couldn't do it. I said there's Sauce Brothers Ocean Towing, there's Knutson Ocean Towing, and there's another tugboat company, Oregon Offshore. Thank you, Steve. And the tug companies indicated that their vessels that one of them had, they were being in for repairs. The other tug company indicated that they didn't have crews to go out and do it, and the other tug company was also on dry dock. So the gentleman called back in distress, debating whether to call a tug out of Seattle or to use us. And I indicated I could not get to you until Sunday morning because of the traffic into Coos Bay, and then we would have a break. And he says, well, you're the guy. So we went and did that job to just kind of demonstrate, you know, what it takes for the good and the bad times. We've been there over 40 years, and there were some months we didn't even have any shipping. It was free for other tugboat companies to come into the bay at any time and offer equipment that would do the job for whatever it takes, depending on the conditions of the vessel to be moved. Nobody had stepped up to the plate to do that. And believe me, if there was a couple of escort tractor tugs or something sitting in that bay, my first job as a pilot is to make sure that vessel gets in safe and gets out safe. Those vessels would supersede what Coos Bay Towboat Company has at the present time. There would be no issue in my mind of which tug company to use. Coos Bay Towboat Company, and I feel that this is just kind of got rammed in because we've just purchased, it's been purchased since last spring, 7,000 plus horsepower Z drive tug. It's for the safety of these ships to come in because it needs that kind of equipment to move these vessels in and out of these ports. This is a escort ship assist, and it's a ship rescue. This is kind of a vessel that can be stationed here since there's no other tugs around close to it to rescue a ship if it gets in distress, say like maybe preventing something like the new Carissa. God help, nothing ever happens like that again. But this kind of a vessel is going to be here at the end of the month, and I feel what was being taken place, there's this sort of a tug for the safety of these vessels that nobody would probably maybe even try to do that because there's no business in Coos Bay. This would bring business to Coos Bay. We have the comment that John made. That Captain Chin, you know, a Pack Basin, that he said that there was a contract between the terminal. This is a thing that goes on all the time. This goes on in San Francisco, Portland. This is nothing new. The contract was set in place by the terminal. And we had other contracts, you know, from other docks to show that this is an ongoing thing. And then Captain Chin from Pack Basin come down, and he visited with Knutson Towboat Company. He visited with us, and he was real pleased with the way the service was, and he wasn't going to change it, even though there might have been a lower rate to get the business. So. The picking of pilots, like Captain Wood said, that's on a board, and then the savings of $300,000 to $400,000. I have no idea what fees are those in. Those are definitely, you know, not all the ship assist fees. I don't know if he's putting pilot fees in there and some longshoreman fees in there, some dockage, some 911 security fees. I have no idea where those fees are coming from. I feel that, you know, this isn't going to create any new jobs. I think it's a big company trying to destroy a small company. We've had many, many issues in the past with attorney general investigation, in front of legislation, lawsuits, the tugboat company coming back maybe to the board trying to interfere with the rates for the pilot transportation, pilot takeover, and now this. It's been a continuation, that seems like. I've been piloting for over 28 years, you know, and if something like this goes on, there's limited pilots. It takes many, many years to get pilots trained up on board. And if something like this passes, I'm going to have to make a decision if whether I'm going to be a Coos Bay pilot or I'm going to be a tugboat owner exclusively. The money that's invested in these tugs to do this kind of an operation is just tremendous, and to be there for the bad times. I didn't see no tugboat company coming in there when there's one or two ships a month, or there's no ships. We stayed there for the duration, and it was tough. We had to cut things like you wouldn't believe just to still stay there. And the main thing, not just to keep the boats, but to keep the crew. The crew is experienced. And they got my life at their stake on the transportation, you know, so it's a ship assist, it's a pilot boat, and it's also a ship escort, which we've had many a times when the, the ship's engines have failed. We've had a tug with us. We've had fog. We've had small boats during fishing seasons. The engines conk out, and they had to go with us. There's a real reason why we have an escort with us. The cost for other companies to do an escort, I have no idea what that would be, but that isn't where we're going to meet the tug up off the berth of the turning base, and that tug needs to be coming with me from the open sea up because there's such a safety risk issue here that goes on, and I've been through about every scenario you can imagine with this. This thing is going to cost the Port of Coos Bay a tremendous amount of money. I think it's going to cost the whole community down there and maybe Yaquina Bay, because if the, first of all, we're not going to have no pilot boats because they're the designated tugs, so those are going to be taken away. So then it's going to put us in a scenario to get transportation to what we need to put us on and off those ships. And I've had a lot of several life-threatening things with getting on and off there, and I couldn't imagine trying to do that with somebody that I don't know or equipment. I have to have control of the equipment so I know what the maintenance. I can't go out there and have an engine quit. I can't go out there because somebody's on vacation and there's a new guy running that boat. I've had that boat over my head 20 feet, 6 feet off the side of that ship, and down below me 15, 20 feet in a heartbeat like that. You got to have experienced men. And then the Coos Bay is so unique that it kind of does everything. With the ship assist, pilot boat, and escort.
Captain Yates, as a pilot, have you ever used another company's ship assist?
Yes.
How frequently does that happen?
Well, back in the mid-80s, Mr. Knudsen was getting into the ship assist, so when we got the phone calls and it was Knudsen Towboat, I think at that time he had about 10%, maybe when he got real busy, maybe 15% of the business. Then it kind of dropped out, sounded like he had other avenues to go to, and of course the business got slow. In Coos Bay, it isn't because of tug rates or pilot rates, you know, the business just went away. Everything was just slowing and dying and going away there.
So how do
I've recommended sometimes if they're around and I need a third tug, I have to have I'll try to call one of these guys.
So how do you respond to the comment, and I don't know whether it's accurate or not, but it's been made that the ship assist rates in Coos Bay are substantially higher than all the other ports on the West Coast?
Well, if that was the case, what's keeping from other tugboat companies coming in here and supplying the equipment? If we're the highest, the revenue, the money
that's
should
the
be
issue.
There for someone
that's,
to come
that's
in.
The issue. That's the point.
Senator Starr?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's the point. That's what we're hearing is that the folks that are bringing ships in are basically being told that that there's only one deal in town, and that's your deal. And that's what we're hearing. And you just mentioned that you've sent other business to other ship assist companies back in the 80s, 30 years ago. What about in the last decade?
Well, what's happened back when Mr. Knudsen had those tugs and had them built, the ships have grown tremendously in size. So we had to step up to the plate and get some more horsepower or Ballard pole. Nobody was going to want to come in, so we just stepped up to the plate and we took care of business because of the size of the vessels now. And now the vessels are reaching to a point that they need like the tractor tugs. Or if there's any sort of, the vessels have even stepped up again. Some of these wood chip carriers that come into Coos Bay are the size of small LNG tankers. The freeboards are up to 70 plus feet. Our drafts that we work the ships are 37, 38, 39.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask a follow-up?
Mm-hmm.
So have you recommended any other ship assist companies in the last 10 years?
Oh, I haven't been asked that. To recommend. I have recommended this when that fishing vessel broke down, or a lot of times we get calls to tow barges or some sort of tow, and we're not in that business. We do one thing, we do it well, that's pilot boat, ship assist, and escort. We refer to Sauce Brothers or Knudsen tugboats or offshore towing.
So
and we have done that, yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Sir?
Oh, I'm Marvin Caldera, President Local 12, Longshoreman. We've worked with Charlie Yates, Captain Yates, for years. He's done a very safe job in the Port of Coos Bay. He's continued to bring the ships in and remove them back out to sea again safely, no accidents. This bill would put 10 men out of work. That's working on the tugs. I wrote something out here. I'll read it to you. And what I have here is the bill will put Coos Bay employees, which is that's 10 employees, out of work. How can this be good for our community? The combination of Coos Bay towboat And Coos Bay pilots have kept Coos Bay viable port, even though, even when we had bad times, Charlie's been there. Coos Bay pilots use Coos Bay towboats, tugs, and for crossing the bar, boarding in rough seas. Captain Yates has the right to choose the boats he feels that he's safe on. It's a life-threatening situation out there whenever Captain Yates goes over the bar to pick up a ship. That's not only the ship, the Charlie's life is endangered, but bringing that ship in safely. He's continued to do that for a lot of years. And the way we see it, that this should go before the Maritime Board, Board of Maritime Pilots. And that should be decided there. It shouldn't be decided here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we're available for questions. I want to make sure you knew that. I do. I presume you do.
Senator,
the question is barrier to entry. And the question that I have is, as a pilot, the number of pilots that are allowed in each port is regulated by the maritime. What regulates how many pilots go in each port, for starters?
No, I'll respond to that, Senator Girod and Senator Byron. The Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots looks at the pilot ground and the amount of workload or work that it's to be there, and they'll determine whether or not the number of pilots, and then that's how they factor what the rate will be to cover the cost for that those pilots. As the shipping went down, I transferred out. There was three pilots there. As they retired, they didn't get replaced until it went down to just Charlie. And eventually the shipping started to come back up, and so we had requested from the State Board of Maritime Pilots to provide us with a trainee, because it was going to take 3 years to get this guy trained to even start to bring in the ships, just because of the less workload. If you have nothing to train on, it's hard to get your trips in. And so but the State Board determines the amount of pilots on the grounds.
Follow up,
please.
So the second question is, and the chair touched on that, is the freedom of other companies to be able to compete with his own, with the captain's own tugboats, if the captain makes the decision of what tugs to use. Now, he said that the operators are free to request the tugs that they want, but or the people coming in, the operators, not the operators, but the ships. And so it seems to me, and I understand the arguments of a monopoly being set up here, where as a pilot, you want your own tugs to do the work. So that's the crux of this argument: is there truly a monopoly or not? And it really
right.
I live in Mill City. I don't live on the coast, and so I mean, but it appears to me like there is a monopoly here.
As a pilot, it's our job to operate the vessel in a safe manner and to utilize the equipment that's provided, and through the previous lawsuits and other, the lawsuit specifically, we could not basically promote our equipment over the competitor's equipment. It was determined that the four boats that were in place during that lawsuit were all equal, and it was a fair market for anybody. Like I say, if I needed a third boat and I don't have, and I've only got two, well, then I say I need a third boat. Find me one.
But the first three boats would be your boats, and then the fourth boat might be the competitor's boat if our
company has been designated as the provider.
Okay.
If the steamship agent or whatever called and said, well, we're using FOSS, or not FOSS, but using Knutson on this job, or SOSS, or whatever, well, then we would use their boats, and if we needed to add more, we'd tell them to find us another boat. But we don't
our customers who we've had long-term customers that like utilizing Coos Bay towboat tugs, they have all the choice in the world if they want to go to another vendor. If they want to go to another vendor, that's their choice.
Who determines the qualifications of each boat and what's needed in the tow? It's the pilot. Is that not correct?
The pilot determines what he's going to need for thrust and horsepower and bollard pull to overcome the forces that are going to be expected affecting that ship as you're bringing it in the bay or turning it and berthing it. Most companies, and this was also determined through the lawsuit, they were bollard pull tested to find out what the capabilities were of every one of those boats. So we all know what those are. And so that's how you can make your determination on what you need for bollard pull forces. And like I say, in the last 15 to 20 years, they haven't even been around to worry about it. They haven't been providing the service. They went to other ports. If they're back, well, then that's they're back. And so if they're hired to do the work, they can be hired to do the work. And if they're told it's their job, it's their job.
One final one. And I'm sorry. This is the crux of the whole argument, and I want to cast a somewhat accurate vote. But the board, I mean, you want us to refer this to the board, but the board has limited entry problems as well. I mean, if I wanted to go be an operator, I obviously would have to get the training, but I'm sure there's a list there that's a lot longer of people wanting to be it than the positions that are available. So to refer it to the board, which creates monopolies, basically, or oligopolies, it seems a little bit more... It just seems to be counterproductive that's probably not where we need to make that decision. You actually have two monopolies together.
No, I take issue with that.
Okay.
There is no monopoly in the ship assist business. You could say.
But the board's created a monopoly on the pilot.
The board has regulated maritime pilots in Coos Bay specifically since 1931. They licensed a pilot, and yes, it is a monopoly for this the foreign vessels that do come in. We're in control of our own transportation. So and it's the same way on the Columbia River Bar. Columbia River Bar has their Saddle Mountain Corporation, which owns their pilot boats. The pilots, through their fees, they pay for the transportation service to their own boats. So they're their own best customers, and that's all they do. They don't do ship assist, and that's their revenue stream is what they charge the ships. If at Coos Bay, we have the right to utilize our own boats. Coos Bay Towboat owns the boats. We are as pilots. We charge the ship what we get for our tariff, and then we pay Coos Bay Towboat that money that it's owed for giving us the pilot transportation. So in a sense, we're our own best customer in that fact. The ship assist, that's a free market deal. The fact that we're able to do the pilot vessel work cheaper because we are also getting dual service out of the boats is a benefit to the state and it's a benefit to the port. If this bill was to pass and strictly make us only utilize our pilot transportation as pilot boats, it's going to be a considerable larger expense out of that pilot or out of the tariff that is charged the ship, mainly for our pilot transportation. And if that happens, I guess that happens. And then we'll let God sort it out as far as who supplies towboats. But it'll come back down to some, you know, it's still going to be a free market as far as the ship assist work in Coos Bay. This is why.
Do you understand that?
Mr. Chair, I just make a comment to Senator Girard, my friend from Air Salem.
thank you.
Sorry about that. The issue about the location for review here is not
is mostly because, with all the respect to you, one of the best committees in the Oregon Senate, you just aren't going to have the best committee in the Oregon Senate.
Pandering
I submit
help.
To you. Well, why not? Groveling usually works, but I'm trying. There's just not enough time to vet this issue, which even for me in the last hours is very complicated, very long-standing, many, many years, including an obligation that's been conveyed to me by our counsel who couldn't be here today, that grievances such as this are supposed to go to Judge Hogan's court by a previous determination by the judge. We simply have suggested the Board of Maritime Pilots because this legislature, in its wisdom over the years, has created that entity to regulate this industry. And it seems like it makes more sense to us that we will participate very genuinely in such a review if Ms. Duncan and her colleagues were to schedule one. That makes more sense than an attempt to resolve this in the next 2 or 3 days. That's our advocacy, and thank you for your attention.
Senator Starr, do you have a question?
You know, for the sake of trying to move this along, I think I will not continue the conversation.
Okay. I just, someone clarify for me. Apparently, this issue was litigated or mediated or arbitrated, whatever the right term is, by Federal Judge Hogan.
Yes.
How long ago?
1988, I believe.
1988, so it's a fairly new issue, huh? And what was the outcome of that litigation or arbitration?
It was my understanding the outcome of that it was a settlement, basically, is that the boats that were involved in it, the Coos Bay, the North Bend, the Captain Louie, and the Coos King, that they were all to be equally capable of doing the work, and that they were all to be treated the same, and that the open market was going to determine who gets the work. And that's the way it was left, and if there was any question on either one of the parts, as far as the fairness or if there was something skullduggery going on, it was to be arbitrated through him. And there hasn't been, as far as I know, any contact since that time for him to do any arbitration, certainly not by us.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Girard.
One brief one. How about new entries? You know, the court decision, you listed the three names of the tugs that were available. If I bought a tug tomorrow, could I enter into the market?
Sure, it's what we do up on the Columbia River for any of the towboat vendors up there is we request and expect to get full specifications on that vessel, including a bollard pull test done by a marine surveyor to let us know exactly what the actual tonnage that it's capable of, the drive systems that are used. Nowadays, we have drive systems where the propellers do a 360-degree azimuthing thrust, which makes them a huge difference as far as their capabilities. And we get all of that, and we put it into the pool. So when a pilot's dispatched to a ship and he knows which company it's going to be, ask him what tugs am I getting, he can look at the sheet and see just what he's going to be getting and whether he wants either more or is happy with what he's been, is being sent to help him and assist. In Coos Bay, Coos Bay has been a different story because of the lack of work. As before, we went down to 2 months with no ships at all. Or Charlie has. So I was up on the river. But,
Mr. Wood, yes. I'm curious. One comment that had been made to me, and I don't remember by who in this process in the last 24 hours, was that Coos Bay is the only port on the West Coast where a pilot also owns the steerage.
Has a ship assist
company.
On the West Coast, possibly now, there were pilots down in San Francisco that were still piloting, and they also owned their own towboats that they did that work with, that they were working under their federal license. As far as the other ports, probably not, but I don't think there's any laws outside of any laws that make it illegal for pilots to do that.
In New York,
the pilots there, they're actually employees of the tugboat companies in New York Harbor and also in Portland, Maine.
where they work for their towboat company. They get alongside of the ship, they get up on the ship, and they do the piloting in the harbor and also the docking. I don't know when that broad statement was made anywhere in the country. Well, there's 1,600 state licensed pilots, and I don't know how anybody can just make that broad statement without showing some facts. And they can say anything, but there should be a venue where those facts should be brought out.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson.
Yeah, just a comment. This committee has got a tremendous amount of investment over the last three sessions, 6 years, in the development of Coos Bay. And so that is of interest to the state, and that policy is of interest to the state. And both of the captains, thank you for coming. Your council has done a beautiful job having you work in the phrase last-minute delay in 48 hours. but to those of us that have been around a while, we actually can are looking at the facts of the case. I will tell you that I have zero confidence, and it's nothing personal, that this should be at the Board of Maritime Pilots. You have just told me your position. The last person who was here, Ms. Duncan, has just told me her position. And if this case has been around for 30 years and the board has not resolved it, I have zero confidence that it will. As an economic position, we're trying to make sure that the city of Coos Bay and all of the importers and exporters and all the work we do with rails and train and timber and airport get utilized. If we find out there's something locally that's stopping that from occurring, that is in the interest of this committee, not in the interest of the Maritime Pilot Board. That's my comment.
Senator Beyer, Chair, and Senator Atkinson, Vice Chair, and other senators. I'd just like to add a little bit to this. I'm going to back up a little bit on the history of things always being rushed through. I had Knutson Towboat was going to do the ship assist, so I requested Ballard Pole, ABS Ballard Pole, and horsepower. I never got it from the agent. The agent instructed that they was going to have the rest of the ship assist forever. There's no room for negotiations or talking on that. It kind of reminds me of what's kind of taking place with this part here. And then this is such a complex issue that whatever the state decides to do, or whatever you gentlemen decide to do, is going to cost the Port of Coos Bay a tremendous amount of more money because of the transportation issues for us to get on and off those vessels. The other thing is that I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry about that. I'm so wrapped up with this. But
I would just say as a conclusion, Mr. Chair, as we leave the witness table, with your permission, that we share Senator Atkinson's view. We're interested in the economic health and well-being of Coos Bay. Messages we have conveyed to Coos Bay legislators in the last while. So we share your interest, Senator, and are happy to work with you. If you have any questions, I'll get the answers from the experts. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate it. I am going to recess temporarily on Senate Bill 1543 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1545. Senator Olson, thank you for being patient. Thank you for allowing me to let that panel finish. It was a long one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and members of the committee. I have about 8 pages of testimony I'd like to give, but I'll shorten it up here. For the record, my name is Alan Olson. I'm Senator representing Senate District 20, the beautiful heart of Clackamas County. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 1545. Oregon is a state filled with the entrepreneurial spirit, and Senate Bill 1545 epitomizes that entrepreneurial spirit. Senate Bill 1545 supports those truck drivers that want to get ahead. They take the plunge, if you will, with their own money and labor to create a business. They operate as an independent trucker hauling loads across America to provide for their families. These small business owners are the backbone of our workforce and should be applauded for their willingness to be their own boss. Senate Bill 1545 clarifies the law on employment in the trucking industry, and I wholeheartedly support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
That was very brief.
Senator Edwards.
Just a quick question for the Senator. What day of the week is it?
Pardon?
What day of the week is it?
Today is Tuesday. And everybody should have a job on Tuesday.
You're here.
Are there any other questions of the Senator?
Mr. Chair, due to the brevity of the statement, I'm a yes on this.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very
Most
much for
appreciated.
Your time.
Okay, we're going to recess on Senate Bill 1545 and return to reopen the hearing on Senate Bill 1543. And let me ask, because I can't tell from the list, is there others who wish to address the Dash 4 amendments on the ship assist? Looks like I have, who is it? Dale's house?
I think he left.
Missed him. We're back open on it. Mr. Sauce?
Yes.
You're up.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dale Sauce. I'm here today representing the American Waterways Operators Association, AWO. We're the National Trade Association for the tug and barge industry in the United States of America. We represent approximately 30,000 mariners, 8,000 tugs and barges, over 400 tug and barge companies in the United States of America. We're here to support this amendment. We believe that the monopolistic practice that has existed in the Port of Coos Bay is wrong. We believe that there is a safety issue also. Lots of things have been said here, and I'll try to be succinct and identify the ones that I think have been misstated or mischaracterized. Safety. As a member of AWO, we also operate tugs and barges. We've had the pleasure of operating in the state of Oregon for nearly 75 years, and our business spans five generations now of Oregonians. In 1951, when we moved out of the port of Tillamook, port of Garibaldi, to the port of Coos Bay, it was for one reason, because it is the safest bar port in the state of Oregon. That's why we moved our operations there. That's why we have continued to operate there for nearly 60 years. We, in the 1970s, 80s, and up until the 90s, when we lost a lot of our forest products, moved safely out of the port of Coos Bay nearly 500,000 tons of cargo annually, safely, every day of the year. And so it is the safest bar port. Then the question comes up and talks about pilotage versus ship assist. Pilot boats and access. We have some of the most professional bar pilots and river pilots in the world. They are a very, very professional group of individuals, and they are tasked with the safe entry of foreign ships into our ports at all times. Their sole focus, in our opinion, should be the safety of that ship. Not worrying about, which is the conflict, and I'll get to monopoly later, but the conflict of interest, because what if they're thinking about their assist boat? What if they're thinking about some crew member? What if they're thinking about anything other than the non-delegable duty that they have to bring that ship safely into our ports and make sure that it departs safely from our ports in the state of Oregon? And so safety is an issue always, clause paramount. And we think that it is wrong for that conflict of interest to exist. Monopolistic practice. I can assure you, if you read the written testimony of Mr. Knutson, he will say in that written testimony, and my daughter would collaborate, my older daughter, not the one here with me today, that she has had conversations with the owner of Ocean Terminals. He was threatened. He was threatened by Mr. Yates that if Knutson Towboat was allowed to bring that ship in and provide the ship assist service in the port of Coos Bay, he would suffer consequences. That is wrong. Monopolistic practices are wrong, and the monopolistic practices have led to our ship assist costs being twice the normal rate of any other equal port in Oregon, Washington, California. Mr. Woods talked about the West Coast. There are no other examples of this conflict of interest. In fact, in the 1970s, when it did exist, he is correct, it existed with three pilots down in the port of San Francisco Bay Area. Legislation was passed down there to stop this practice from existing, just like it was done in the state of Maryland, to stop this practice from existing. It is a very simple issue. Pilotage and pilot boats, which are not covered under this amendment, safely take the pilot to the vessel and board the ship. That's what the pilot, that's what's done on the Columbia River. That's not what this amendment is even questioning. There's about, I think, a $550,000 cost associated that has been negotiated by the State Board of Maritime Pilots. Do an excellent job. Let's not confuse apples and oranges here. We're not talking about pilot boats and the safety of the pilot and getting anything done there. What we're talking about is when the ship arrives at the dock, the ship assist vessels should be fair and open competition and not under a monopolistic practice. It is simply wrong in our opinion and needs to be corrected. It is a long festering issue, and we do not think a pilot licensed by the state of Oregon should have the right, authority, or any influence over fair market value, fair competition, non-monopolistic practices of letting any ship assist company. We have members of our association. Foss Maritime was mentioned here. They're interested in coming to the Port of Coos Bay. They will not, as long as that monopoly exists. They simply will not. Questions were talked about economic consequences. In our opinion, the costs go down. When there's not a monopoly, it is a free market. The free market drives the cost down, better service. Let's talk about the services there. The pilot, Coos Bay Towboat, operates vessels with one engine, one propeller. The competition that has been there operates vessels with two propellers. I don't think it takes a large leap to make it to, I would rather have the redundancy of steerage, propulsion, engines, so that if I'm on a boat and the engine fails and I only have one of them, I go nowhere and get run over by the ship. That's a grave safety concern. I don't know of many ports in the United States of America that are represented by our trade association that even operate those obsolete vessels anymore in ship assist service to vessels. It is simply not as safe as vessels with two engines. The vessels that are operated by Coos Bay Towboat are over 40 years old. They are two of them are surplus Navy single engine vessels, which have been surplus and made obsolete by the United States Navy. But they are now being used in the Port of Coos Bay with a monopolistic rate that is double the normal rate. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today.
Sir, I guess I have a question.
Okay.
Obviously, the pilots and that portion of the job is regulated by the Maritime Pilots Board. Why was ship assist separated out from that? I understand that in the past it wasn't, but...
No, in the past it was always separated out.
It has
always been separated in other ports, ship assist, and that has always... There are other ports that have pilotage and pilot boats and helicopters, and the pilots do a fantastic job for our state.
But why is it not under the oversight of the board?
The pilotage rates and the pilot boat are under the
oversight.
I know,
but I mean the ship assist.
The ship assist is not, because that has always been allowed to be free market and allowed the markets to set the rates and the equipment standards and let ship owners select out from a group of qualified operators who they wish to utilize. Mm-hmm. And it's really a very simple issue here. Captain Yates can make a lot of money as a Coos Bay pilot and a pilot boat operator and be a Coos Bay pilot, or he can choose to be a ship docking company operating on any port on the U.S. West Coast. We encourage it. We commend him for buying a salvage vessel. If he wants to be in that business, he should be in that business, but not be in both business, profiting from both businesses and charging monopolistic rates. It is simply wrong, in our opinion, to allow a monopoly to exist that makes our port non-competitive. There are many of us in Coos Bay, Oregon, that feel that Coos Bay is on the cusp of development. We want to see shipping and those type of things prosper. We believe that it brings economic development. Economic development brings family-wage jobs, and family-wage jobs bring good, better school systems. So it is simply trying to make our port more competitive.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
So your position is that he could do one or the other, but not both?
Chair Byer, Senator Burdick, absolutely. That is our position.
You're
we believe that either one is an option for him.
So you're saying that because of his position as a pilot, he has the leverage to force the companies to use his company in the ship
he absolutely does, and he has used it with a vengeance and a club for many, many years. And 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when it was run by a different age of people and a different mindset, the ship assist rates were not double a normal rate on the U.S. West Coast. They are now double because of the monopolistic practices and the exercise of monopolistic control by a single pilot that is authorized.
And so how long has this particular problem been going on with the threats and the coercion to use
the monopoly?
For as long as I have been in Coos Bay, which is now approaching 35 years, is all I can testify to, because I don't know. My father, uncles, and grandfather, different people have told me that it has gone on since the inception, but I can only tell you that for the past 35 years, as I've lived in Coos Bay, Oregon, it has gone on, and it is wrong and needs to be corrected, and that's why we've support this amendment.
Okay, and my last question is, if this has been going on and it's such a serious problem, why come into a short session on such a complicated issue with only 48 hours notice? This is a very complex issue.
Because the rates traditionally in the past were not monopolistically driven to the same extent, and it is just recently with the uptick in business in our community that it has gone to twice what a normal rate is and to a monopolistic level, and we are worried that it will make our port non-competitive, it will drive business out of our port, and that as the market potentially shifts and the China log market drops, we will be the first port that will be eliminated from ports of call by Chinese log ships. And so it has become the issue of making our port competitive, because historically we never had this kind of differential before.
So that's really the crux of the question. How long ago did the rates jump up?
I can't tell you that. I'm just aware of this last incident in the last past year with the Chinese log ships and the Chinese log ships bringing it to our attention. So I cannot answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
A real quick question. If a ship is coming into port and you have more than one pilot, can they ask for a certain pilot, or is there a schedule to the pilot so that one's on for 12 hours, one's off for 12 hours, and that sort of thing?
Chair Byer, Senator Girard, I believe that there is a schedule. I'm not familiar with that. We do not do ship assist, and we're not involved in that part of the business. And so an expert in that, Ms. Duncan, would be able to answer that, or somebody from the State Board of Pilotage would be able to answer that question. I'm not.
Okay.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the boat issue? Okay, and we'll move, let's see, who else do I have here? Still on the same bill, Mr. Russell. Yeah, you've got a panel there, Russell, Campbell, and Rakowitz. I don't know, there's John. And there's Campbell, all right.
That's an unholy trinity.
Oh, hey.
For the record, I'm Bob Russell of the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I wish I could promise you we will be brief, but we may not.
Thank you.
This issue actually began at the beginning of the 2011 session. The state has, for a long time, had Oregon.gov, the website, and all the state agencies use that. And a lot of the state agencies have participated in electronic commerce so that you can do your business with the state electronically instead of having to go to a brick and mortar office or whatever. For a number of years, those services have been provided by Hewlett-Packard. And each agency that participated in Oregon.gov or the e-commerce program, and they paid an assessment to cover the cost of Hewlett-Packard providing the service. The Department of Administrative Services wanted to look at a different business model. So they put out an RFP and they got bids. And basically they've made a decision to hire a company that will provide the e-commerce, that will host the website. And we're absolutely fine with that. We don't have an issue with state government being involved in website hosting, e-commerce, any of that stuff. We think it's great. It's a great way to reach out to the public. So that's not our issue. What was very different about the business model is instead of having an assessment from each agency that participated to pay for it, they decided that they were going to add a fee for a single service and would cover the whole cost of providing these services. The service that we're talking about is the motor vehicle record. Insurance companies, trucking companies, and a variety of others obtain motor vehicle records. That's your driving record, basically. Insurance companies use it to determine whether they're going to insure you and set the rates. Trucking companies are required by federal law to obtain motor vehicle records. Today, that motor vehicle record costs $2. In some instances, it costs less, but for our purposes, $2. Not a problem. ODOT has the authority to set what's called a reasonable fee for the motor vehicle record. In the future, either beginning May 1st or June 1st, this whole thing is going to change, the funding mechanism. And instead of it costing $2, it's going to cost $9.68, which is almost a 500% increase. That in itself is a concern, but not our biggest concern. Our biggest concern is that the revenue derived from selling the motor vehicle record belongs to the highway fund. And what this revenue is being used or will be used for under the new model is to fund the website and e-commerce services provided by general funded agencies. And the three of us are sort of the self-appointed protectors of the highway fund, and that is our objection. And let me explain a little bit more. You have the $2 that ODOT charges today for the motor vehicle record. They thought that they could buy that record from ODOT and escape the provisions of the highway fund. And they hired an economist and said, what's the fair market value of the record? They determined that it was $4.68. They then determined that they needed $3 to actually provide the electronic hosting and e-government services. So that brings us to the total of $9.68. Now, I said that this issue came to us back at the beginning of the 2011 session. The Department of Administrative Services had House Bill 2064 introduced, which would have provided them with the authority to purchase the record from DMV and to sell the record to this company that would then provide these services. That bill did not pass. So what I passed out to you is an opinion that was written by Greg Chamoff of Davis, Wright, and Tremaine. And you may, folks may remember Greg. He was head of legislative counsel for a number of years and somebody that I respect a great deal. And basically, in his opinion, he concludes that the Department of Administrative Services does not have the statutory authority to do what they're proposing to do. But more importantly, even if they did, the Constitution prohibits spending any of the revenue that's derived from selling the motor vehicle record on non-highway fund purposes. You know, as much as I respect Mr. Chamoff and believe that his opinion is absolutely correct, lawyers sometimes disagree. You know, who would have thought? But, you know, one of the things that I think is important to folks around here is, does it pass the smell test?
No, it doesn't.
And when I look at this, and you've got a 500% increase in a fee. It's a fee that is not paid directly by the general public, but yet it impacts every person in this state that has a driver's license issued by DMV. So, in a sense, it's a hidden fee that they will realize at some point in increasing their insurance costs or other things, but it's not one that is readily apparent, nor has it been enacted by the legislature. This is being done strictly by an administrative act. And you sort of add to that this notion that you can overcome the constitutional protection in the highway trust fund by compensating the fund for the value of the asset. It, at least to us, it doesn't pass the sniff test. Now, we are not talking about a little bit of money. When 2640 was introduced, LFO prepared their fiscal impact or began their fiscal impact, and they determined that there, each biennium, there's approximately 3.4 million motor vehicle records that the state sells that would be subject to this fee. At $2, ODOT gets 6.8 million a biennium. And the $4.68 adds another almost 16 million. And then the $3 adds another 10.2 million. So we're now talking about $33 million a biennium. It is not an insignificant sum. So I would be happy, we will be happy to answer any questions. I'm going to stop my direct testimony there and turn it over to these fine gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of AAA. I'll keep my comments fairly brief. One of the most of the folks, well, all the folks here at the, on the panel are very heavily involved whenever we have discussions about transportation funding packages. One of the benefits that we have in Oregon, as difficult as it is for us to look at transportation funding packages, at least we can look to the people that we're taxing with a straight face and say, the money that we are collecting is going to be used for the use that we tell you it will be used for. That's one of the reasons why the AAA board is such a strong protector of the highway fund, making sure that it's not used or misused. And we often put tremendous effort behind that. And that's so that we can go to our members when we're asking for them to pay more taxes, that they can trust that at least we will be using it in the way we told them that we will use it. And so when issues like this come up, for some it may seem like a small issue, and forgive me if this is an inappropriate analogy, but for somebody who has suffered skin cancer, if a small dot shows up on their arm, they tend to get very excited about it. Other people might not. For us, when a small dot appears on what potentially could be a misuse of the highway fund, we get very excited about it. What we have before you is an amendment we hope will put this issue to rest in such a way that we don't have to take further activity to try to resolve it. That's our hope in bringing this forward to you today.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, John Rakowitz with AGC. Most of everything important has been said. Everybody here will not be surprised. AGC have been a longtime defender for all the reasons discussed by my fellow panelists of the Highway Trust Fund and as it's defined in the Oregon Constitution. I do want to add one thing. We have been in conversations with Michael Jordan himself, and we have had very congenial, and we've agreed to disagree. So we have worked through a very long and arduous process before we decided we better find out. Greg Chamoff's opinion is the result. Are we just overreacting, or are our concerns really warranted? So the three of us ponied up the money to do that. When we look at it, my exec leadership looks at it, it looks like our concerns are extremely warranted, and it's of enough concern that I have to give daily reports on this issue to my executive leadership. So we sit here, you know, as a partner with the two primary organizations that represent the people who pay the fees, and are in agreement with everything they said. Thank you.
A few questions.
Senator Edwards?
A really brief comment, Mr. Chair. The Highway Trust Fund enjoys some constitutional protections that some other funds in the state don't. So perhaps some of the three of you would join me in my efforts to further protect other funds that are paid by other fee payers from sweeps, not only this legislative session, but in future legislative sessions. And I'll be working in the interim to develop that type of legislation.
Chair Beyer, Senator Edwards, there's been a lot of discussion about sweeps and other issues when, for instance, when we pay a fee to CCB, Construction Contractors Board, we don't believe that should be swept. We're paying a user fee. So we have a general policy that that's how we feel about it. So be happy to work with you in the interim.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I'm going to do an unusual thing here. Captain Yates, you apparently feel like your reputation has been impugned or slandered. I'll give you 3 minutes. But I'd ask that you make it quick, whatever point you want to make. We spent a lot of time on that, and I have a lot of other people who we're running out of time on.
Thank you, Senator Beyer, Mr. Chair. Those comments that Mr. Soss has made is just absolutely not true at all. The tactics that he said that I have done is that has never taken place, and if the tug rates were such a set that they were so high, I cannot understand why other tug companies haven't come in. If that money is there, there's just no business, and that's how come other tug companies haven't come in. And if they choose to make a decision on what I'm going to do, they're going to have to figure out what they're going to have for tugs, and if they're going to be there when the shipping grows, we're going to be there continuously on this. But for what Dale said, is just absolutely not correct. One little bit attack on me like that is just unacceptable. I'm more professional than that. I would never discuss any issues.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let's see now. I have... My dilemma is that I've got a whole lot of you who'd like to testify on this, and we got some people who have come to be here today. I have the county commissioners in from Roger Nyquist, Patty Milne, and
Sam Brentano.
Huh?
Sam Brentano.
Are they here?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to recess just very temporarily on Senate Bill 1543 and which one is it? It's the rest stop bill?
No. I hope not.
No. Which one is it? Help me out.
What bill do you
help
want?
Me out.
What bill?
I support her.
Which bill?
The old
SGM 201.
Patty?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I want to thank you for the opportunity. For the record, my name is Roger Nyquist. I'm the chair of the Linn County Board of Commissioners. I'm here to testify in support of SJM 201 with the Dash 1 amendments. 50% of the land in Linn County is owned by the federal government. In my youth, as many as 50 mills operated in Linn County. Today there are three. The current federal forestry plan has resulted in the loss of thousands of jobs in Linn County. It's time for reasonable people to take reasonable action. The federal proposal is bipartisan. I support the matter before you, and would ask you to vote yes.
Commissioner?
Chair of our committee, I'm Sam Brentano. Oh, excuse me.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Please.
I'm Sam Brentano, Marion County Commissioner. Commissioner Nyquist just really said the same things I want to do. We're asking that you vote aye on the SJM-1. To Marion County, it's been important with roads, public safety, jobs. As you see, this issue could have as many as 12,000 jobs, and I think it'd be a whole lot higher business. Mills that Roger mentioned, even some fire management. I happen to be brand new on the board of the ONC counties. In fact, attended my first meeting in Brookings and Grants Pass Last weekend and saw something that really brought it all home to me, and I wish you all could have, and it was testimony by Curry County Commissioner of talking just what this issue really means to their county, and just about to where he was breaking down and had to stop. We here in Marion County aren't hurt as bad, but we certainly are affected by it. But this is really an issue for the entire state, and certainly the western part of the state even more, and I hope you'll consider it and pass it with an eye. Thank you.
Chair Beyer and committee, I'm Patty Milne, Marion County Commissioner, chair of our board this year. For the sake of brevity, I just want to reiterate the importance of this and our support at Marion County for the Dash 1 amendments and the urgency that we'd like to see you take on this and encouraging our congressional delegates to act on it as well. Thank you.
Questions? I just want to thank them for coming. I think that they took time out of their busy schedule and their political figures, and wait as long as you did. I'm really grateful that you stayed. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Chairman, I'd like to just thank you, too. I represent Jackson, Josephine. We have Curry County right next to us, Klamath County, Douglas County, and I'm sure a lot of your cohorts on the county commission would like to join you. So on behalf of all them who didn't make the four-hour drive up, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I've got this open. I've got two people who are opposed, Christina Hubbard and I think it's Maura Dewey.
Yeah.
If you'd like to come out. Please.
Good afternoon, Chair Breyer, Vice Chair Atkinson, and members of the committee. My name is Christina Hubbard. I'm the project director for Forest Web of Cottage Grove. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you today. My personal concerns about Senate Joint Memorial 201 are, first, the lack of resources within county governments to oversee the management of the ONC lands, and secondly, the cost of establishing a management system or systems if each county is given control of the ONC lands in their jurisdiction. There are no government funds or staffing available to provide any kind of reasonable management plan for these forests. It raises the question of how the counties can better provide management or protection for these forests than what is already in place. But I'm not here to speak only for myself. I am representing over 500 signatories whose names are on the petition I brought with me today. And I apologize that I cannot make 15 copies because I don't have the paper or the funds to do that. The petition will be sent directly to all members of the legislation because it's an online petition. These signatures and comments were gathered in just the past 4 days since we learned of this measure. They demand federal protections be maintained and that the management of the ONC lands remain under the supervision of the Bureau of Land Management. They ask that their state legislature vote no on Senate Joint Memorial 201. I will read a few of the comments for you. The distinction between public and private must be clear and protected. Fuzzy partnerships that allow public resources and money to be used and controlled by private interests and corporations are not in the best interest of the American people, and it is the responsibility of government officials to respect and uphold the best interests of the people. Allowing any kind of private control of BLM lands is wrong. Jennifer Snyder, Cottage Grove, Oregon. Senate Joint Memorial 201 is not the way to resolve the problem with loss of timber revenues to counties. Replacing no payments with short-term practices will only buy a few years and leave a long-term legacy of erosion, dirty water, and degraded forest soils that will take aeons to grow back to healthy forests and watersheds. As a soil and watershed scientist, I am appalled that this is even being considered. Annette Parsons, Grants Pass, Oregon. I have worked and advocated for many years in my community of Williams for sustainable land practices and stewardship of both public lands based on sound ecological principles. Based on my experiences with federal and private management practices in our watershed, the BLM is a far more responsible steward for the public commonwealth. This is This is because federal protections are more comprehensive and rigorous. This level of protection is critical on public lands and should be actually increased. The visible evidence speaks for itself. In our watershed, BLM and private land exist side by side, and the difference is astonishing and disturbing. Private lands are invariably managed for the pass buck, and the result is severely fire-prone blasted landscapes. It's that simple. They can do this because state law on private timberland lets this happen. BLM can't get away with this. While BLM is beginning to implement new sounder management practices on some of the public's land, private logging is firmly entrenched in cut-and-run logging, and let the public and the environment pay the cost. Please vote no on this bill. James McLeod, Williams, Oregon. I could read more, but the message is clear. Senate Joint Memorial 201 is a measure that does not speak to the interests of the health of Oregon's forests or truly represent the economic good of the public. In closing, I ask this committee to consider that though we need to find solutions for the economic problems existing in Oregon's counties, Senate Joint Memorial 201, if allowed to move forward, has the potential to create far more problems than it would solve. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Maura Dewey from Cottage Grove. I'm a resident of Lane County, not affiliated with any organizations here. I've never testified before, so am I supposed to give you these written things? Okay. I
can. You know, if you have a lot of written testimony, you might just summarize it rather than read it.
Right.
All.
I am.
We're sort of pushing right up against our timeline, so.
Okay. Yeah, this is short. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I oppose Senate Joint Memorial 201. I participated in developing the petition that Christina just spoke about and collecting signatures, and I think it's noteworthy that in only 4 days, when we left this morning, we had around 550 signatures on this petition. That's over 100 a day, and we're still counting. This petition will stay open until the close of the session. Oregon counties are not just financially or organizationally, equipped to manage an additional 2.4 million acres of forest land. And even if they were, it would be a bad mistake to remove these ONC lands from the high standards of forest management, skilled forest managers, and environmental protections that are currently offered by federal management. As the proponents of Senate Joint Memorial 201 maintain that BLM has mismanaged these lands, causing increased greenhouse gases and decreased forest health, which I think BLM might take issue with, I would suggest that placing these lands in the care of government entities which are not required to abide by these protections and standards of care would be a terrible mistake. As you'll see from many comments on the petition we submitted, these signers, the people of Oregon, do not wish to relegate these lands to state, county, or private authority. If, after consideration, the people of Oregon come to believe that BLM has been remiss or incompetent in managing these lands, then I suggest the people of Oregon remand these lands to the authority and jurisdiction of an organization that can take care of them, the U.S. Forest Service. There are many benefits to transferring management to USFS. First, the Forest Service already has in place the managers, the programs, and the environmental protections to take care of these lands and foster their health. Also, with these structures in place, the state of Oregon would realize increased revenue return simply by eliminating the high cost of BLM overhead. And third, the U.S. Forest Service is less often challenged in court than BLM. With decreased litigation costs and time wasted in courts, further monetary savings result, and we're able to proceed with the job of protecting the forest at the same time as we put people to work sustainably utilizing our forest resources. One of the documents I submitted is a just-published report called Shared Responsibility, the Conservation Community's Recommendations to Equitably Resolve the ONC Funding Controversy, which not only calls for a transfer of ONC lands to the Forest Service, but suggests ways for the counties, state, and federal government to jointly provide the funding needed for a healthy, robust Oregon economy. I hope you will read it carefully. And one more point I'd like to make is that in Lane County, where I live, one forest land owner, Weyerhaeuser, owns more land than BLM and pays little to no property taxes. There's a little bit of a problem there because one of our largest forest owners is not supporting the county services at all. This is something that needs to be addressed. Please vote no on Senate Memorial 201. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Okay.
Yes, I would like to also thank the few senators that stayed and listened very much for your time and courtesy.
Thank you. We'll wait for questions. Are there questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much. And the chair is back just in the nick of time with the sign-up list.
Thank you very much.
We are sort of out of time, but I want to, we're not going to pass these bills today. We're going to carry them over. We have two more days to hear bills, Thursday and next Tuesday. Is there anybody who's here today who isn't here in the building every day and can't come back another time? Mr. Russell, which bill are you on?
1545.
We'll open a public hearing in 1545 and take that testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. I'm passing around my written testimony. I'm not going to testify today.
Thank you very much.
I just want to remind you the issue here. I've been before you twice before, the last two legislative days. The Department of Employment Department had promulgated a rule that basically said that a trucking company could not sell a truck to a person and then lease that person in the truck back to provide transportation services. Senate Bill 1545 basically says that a person can buy a truck from anybody they want to without restriction. So we can talk about all of that at some other time, but I have two owner-operators here, and it's tough to get them because they're not making money while they're here visiting with you, and they're from out of town. So I'd like to give them an opportunity to make a statement and give you an opportunity to ask them any questions about this issue that you may wish to do. First, we have Alex Criden. He's from Stinger Transportation in Prineville, Oregon.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my first time testimony. I'm an owner-operator. I love driving a truck. I enjoy seeing the country. I love being in control of my own truck. Before I became an owner-operator, I was a company man with Stinger Transport.
Towards you just a little bit. That's good enough.
Being with Stinger Transport as a company guy, I spent 4 years around a truck, getting to know the truck, how it runs, how it operates, maintenance history, all that. Gave me a bottom line operating cost on what that truck was going to cost me to run it per year. So when it came time that the company was going to sell it, I jumped on the opportunity of buying it and turning around and leasing it back onto the company. By doing that, I eliminated a ton of headache with picking up a truck that could have created me a lot of problems on the road. And because of that relationship, you know, and being able to do that and have that freedom, I saved myself a ton of money, a ton of headache, and be able to, you know, put that money back in my pocket to support my family and to pay my taxes, too.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And next, we have Alan Peterson. He's with May Trucking.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alan Peterson. I have been an owner-operator for the past 15 years. I'd like to speak briefly on 2 points. One, why I became an owner-operator, and two, why I chose to purchase a truck from the carrier that I lease it to. One, I chose to become an owner-operator because I wanted to start my own business. I have an LLC. I am an independent contractor. I chose to do that for the freedom and independence that owning my own business brings to me. Secondly, the reason I chose to purchase the tractor that from the company that I leased to is totally my choice. I could have went outside, purchased a used truck from a truck lot. It would have been similar to purchasing a used car. You don't know what you get. I chose to purchase the truck from the company I lease to because, one, they buy top-of-the-line equipment. Two, they maintain their equipment properly. Three, I was able to sit down and review the maintenance records on the truck that I wanted to buy. And fourthly, that before I take possession of it, they detail it really good. They fix any defects that I find wrong with it. They put new tires on it. So I'm confident that I got a better truck purchasing that truck from the company I leased it through. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and yeah, this is my third truck that I've purchased from them over the past 15 years, and they've all been great trucks. Excellent. No problems.
So were you able to, the trucks that your previous two trucks, did you sell those?
Yes. They were worn out. The first one, I sold the Freightliner up in Portland, and they resold it to whoever, I don't know. And the second one was pretty much worn out, and I sold it to Wholesale Truck Parts for parts. It had almost 2 million miles on it.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I just want to express appreciation to the chair for making sure those people who drove all this distance in your trucks got a chance to testify. I appreciate it very much.
Great. Thank you very much, gentlemen, and thank you for driving all the way over here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for your indulgence.
You bet. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify today who can't be here another day?
Yeah.
Please.
I'm in opposition to this bill.
To this bill?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
Of course you are.
Wait a minute. He's here.
Here all the time.
He's here all the time, Mr. Chair.
He's here all the time. He's here.
And my testimony won't take long.
No.
Yeah. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for giving me this opportunity. My name and board committee members. My name is Lynn Lerbach, and I'm here representing Joint Council of Teamsters, which represents approximately 30,000 members in the state of Oregon. The Joint Council of Teamsters is in opposition to SB 1545, taking them out of the definition of employment. Reading this bill, very confusing, difficult to follow. See, where is the separation of for hire, owner-operator, independent contract versus employee? And are we talking about one for-hire person, or two, or three, or four, or more that could work for one company? This takes them out of employment, takes away some of their rights as an employee, not a individual owner-operator. A for-hire could be and is bus driver. That's a for-hire, hauling the public, cab drivers, and then truck drivers. Subsection 1B of this section applies regardless of whether a person leasing equipment to a for-hire carrier purchases, leases, rents, or finances the equipment from any person without restriction. Where is this going? That's kind of scary. What does this really mean? And who is the language protecting or not protecting? Where's the employee in all of this? We're concerned that this language will allow or encourage a company, an employer, to sell their trucks to their employees or other persons, then hire them back as a for-hire carrier, not as an employee, which will relieve the employer of any responsibility of one owning the truck, also relieves the company of the and the employer of having to pay wages, benefits, pension, health and welfare, and also relieving them of state taxes, federal taxes, road taxes, unemployment taxes. This is a drain on the system if you move in this direction. This is only one of our concerns, but it ought to be a concern to this committee that you're going to lose money. And I just came in this impact fiscal impact. I don't know if you all have it, but I was just handed a copy. 2013-15 biannum, $1,188,000 loss. 2013-15 biannum, $3,466,442 a loss by moving in this direction. Does the for-hire carrier hire employees to operate that truck, or does he operate it, or she operate it himself? Or is there more than one truck that is for-hire? You got to look at that. This looks like the FedEx model of how to have dedicated truck drivers who are not really employees. They have that luxury because they're under the Railroad Labor Act, which we try to change. But you know, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it must be a duck, and I see an employee in all of this, not a for-hire truck driver that has no representation, he's got to do everything by himself.
Lynn, so, I thought you had another amendment to 1543 for a minute there.
No, Mr. Chairman, I don't. And I just urge you not to move the bill forward. It's confusing as to the effect upon the trucking industry, both union, non-union, and as important and maybe more important, what's the effect on what the employee, the employee. See, there's a lot of danger here, and that's the future we ought to think about. And I would ask you not to move the bill forward. Thank you. I'd answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Questions? Don't see any. I think they're wearing out.
Thank you. Yeah, I know. I'm sure we all are.
Is there anybody else who feels a need to testify today? Going once? Twice?
Hit the gavel.
We didn't move a lot today. Everything on the agenda today that has not been moved, we will carry over to our next meeting. So we will close on all of the hearings we had open and everything else. We are adjourned for the day.